I'm Alicia,
And I'm Katie.
and this is Crime Squared.
Episode number five.
Yay! Every time I'm like, oh, it's a whole nother one. Yay! I'm gonna be so excited when we do when we get to the double digits.
I'm gonna have to start like making a list or something of all of the topics that we've covered. Otherwise, we're gonna start like repeating topics after a while, I feel like.
Yeah. I was actually talking to Jesse about it when I was trying to figure out what story I wanted to do. I'm like, I have a couple that I've like looked up, and I'm like, at some point I want to do this, but not yet, not yet. I'm like, I want to do more besides just serial killers. It's just I get so into just one. I'm like, oh, now I have to do this one. I can't just keep looking up random ones. But
What do you mean, like more than just serial killers?
like, I would like to do some, like famous kidnappings from Mexico. But
Okay.
so I would like to do some like famous kidnappings from Mexico.
Oh.
And then Jesse came up with a good one of doing like how did he explain it to me? Like, you know, people always have like plots to try and go after like someone famous, usually like a political aspect type of thing, which I don't really want to get into like the political part of it, but you know, there's always like death threats and letters and calls and emails that get sent to like
Like
people, right?
stalkers.
Stalkers too. Yeah, just different kinds of stuff like that, because like the last couple serial killers that I have covered, I mean, I don't want to say it's just same old, same old. Like they rape, they kidnap, and they kill. But I mean, serial killers, like that's, you know, they're literally killing and then torturing. So it's very rare when they just kill someone just to kill them. Like usually there's something else happens, you know? But I don't want to get too repetitive. So yeah,
That makes
I'll
sense.
start kind of mixing it up a little bit. Still regarding Mexico
I want to do ghost stories at some point.
though. Oh yeah. I'd be okay with some good ghost stories.
Like, especially in October, do some
Oh
like
yeah,
really spooky ghost stories. I think that would be fun.
very good idea.
Well,
I did. I wanted to give Taylor Ross a shout out. She messaged us about a story that she wanted Katie to cover. She lives, well, not here in town, but close to me. I went to high school with her husband, so I was super excited about someone that I know. Against her and our Sunday volleyball, sand volleyball league a couple weeks ago. I think it was like throughout the summer, but I saw her a couple times there and I hadn't seen them in a while. It's always very random when I run into them, but thank you for messaging us and thank you for listening. If you have any suggestions ever, keep them coming our way.
Yes, and the one that she wanted me to cover, I've had in the back of my mind. It's Sydney Loof's murder. I've had it in the back of my mind since we started the podcast. I'm just trying to like work myself up to doing it since it was somebody that like we were like two segments removed from knowing her, and like that could have easily been one of us at
Yeah.
that point.
Definitely hits a little close to home.
Yeah, so close to home, especially because we know all the areas that I would talk about.
So
It
for those of you
just.
that don't know, Sydney Loof, that case happened in Nebraska.
Very close to our hometown.
Yeah. Yeah, that will be a tough one.
Yeah, it's that one's gonna take me. That one might have to wait until I can drink again to get through
Good,
that
we can drink
one.
together.
Yes. Two more months. That's all I have left.
Oh
Two more
man,
months.
that'll be a good one though. It'll be nice to see what kind of information you come up with that wasn't like in the news that everyone already knew about, you know. I feel like there's a lot of things that was left out of the media, so I'm kind of excited to see what you come up with on
Oh,
that.
for sure. Since we have, I mean, friends that knew exactly who she was.
Yeah.
Went to school with her, some of them dated her at some point.
Yeah,
I just,
that'll be a
even
really
just
good
now,
one.
it's like making my mouth dry thinking about it. Like, we talk
Yeah.
about serial killers and everything all the time, but then once it's somebody that you know, or, you know, are a person or two removed, it just
It's different.
it hits different for sure.
Yeah. But
But it will
great
get covered.
suggestion.
It's on my
Yes.
list.
That would be a good one.
Yes. Okay. Do you want to go first? Do you want me to go first?
You go first this time.
Okay. So I'm doing Massachusetts this week.
Ooh, I always forget about all those states up there.
I know all the little states.
Yeah, I'm like, oh yeah, I forget that's part of it. That's part of
I'm
the
pretty
US.
sure. I'm pretty sure you've heard this one at some point.
Oh gosh, I don't know. I probably not. I mean, I just found out who BTK was not too long ago. I mean, I remember hearing about it, but like really new. Like to me, I guess that's not one of the most famous ones to me, anyways. Like I remember hearing about it, but I don't know. They were
Oh
like, you
goodness.
listen to, you like true crime and you didn't know about that one? I'm like, I don't know. I guess when I think of true crime, like my mind goes to like different, like ones that aren't very popular. Like I want to know about those a little more than the ones that everyone knows, you know? Because then
Yeah.
there, no one shares anything new. Like everyone knows about it. So everybody's keeping up to date on it when the news and know someone that knows someone. So yeah, I want to know more about those kind of under the ground ones, you know?
Well, even some of the old ones, like I find that if I've listened to it on one podcast and then another podcast covers it, I don't even remember some of the details that they say from that first podcast. Like they'll say different things and be like, I don't remember them saying that in the other podcast or the documentary that I watched or whatever. They always have like a different outlook and sometimes even different information.
Yeah, I appreciate the
But
when people have something different, not just, oh yeah, I heard that too.
right.
Okay. Give me some other
What
information.
else? Okay, so mine this week is on the Boston Strangler.
Ooh, yes, okay. I
Okay,
have heard about that one.
so these crimes took place in the 1960s in and around the Boston, Massachusetts area. The Boston Strangler was also referred to as the Silk Stockings Murderer.
Oh.
Between June 14th, 1962 and January 4th, 1964, 13 women between the 19 and 85 were murdered in Boston. The majority of these women were sexually assaulted and strangled in their homes. None of the victims' homes showed any signs of break-ins or forced entry, meaning that the women had to willingly let them in the door or know whomever was at the door for them not to have to break in. But despite the mass media coverage of these events in this area and defensive measures being on the rise, the stranglings kept happening. So this guy had to be targeting women that he specifically knew or knew would let him in. These events did not just happen exclusively in the Boston area, but rather like the Boston area and surrounding it, which made the jurisdiction a bit more complicated on who all had to be involved with law enforcement to get this crime solved.
Yeah, that part kind of
And
sucks.
yeah,
Dudes.
especially if like they're not people that normally work together. So, I mean, if you didn't normally work with your next door county neighbor police department, it could be a lot harder to figure it out. Or if you're not paying attention, like if
Yeah.
they don't send out a memo or whatever and you're not paying
Well,
attention, but you have three cases similar to their three cases,
I wonder if
it could
some
take five times as long.
police, well, yes, individual cops, but also like their stations, if they get like competitive and don't want to cooperate with other ones, you know what I mean?
Oh, I could definitely see that. Like it becomes like a macho thing. Like I'm gonna
Yeah,
figure it out before you
exactly.
do.
That way, I feel like evidence could get missed real fast or
Right,
just
because
completely overlooked.
one might have evidence that the other one didn't, but they really link together.
Yeah.
So, Massachusetts Attorney General Edward Brooke oversaw and coordinated the many different police forces. Parapsychologist Peter Hurkos was brought in to analyze the events, and he believed that this was the work of one individual. The police were not on board with this. They thought it was multiple people. So here are the names and in the order of their events. Anna Elsa Slicer was
Anna
56.
Elsa?
Yeah, Anna Elsa.
Tell
I'm
me you're a mom
probably
without
going to
telling me
get some
you're a
of these.
mom.
What?
Tell me you're a mom without telling me you're a mom.
Right. I'll probably get some of these names wrong because they're not all complete English. So Anna Elsa was 56. She was sexually assaulted with an unknown object and strangled with a belt of her bathrobe. She was
Oh.
the first one found on June 14th, 1962, in her third floor apartment in Fenway, Boston. I'm not going to give all the exact street addresses. I have them. They'll be in the show notes, but that's a lot. Mary Mullen was 85. She died from a heart attack, and she was found on June 28th, 1962, in her apartment. In this killer's confessions, he said that she had collapsed when he tried to grab her. So,
Oh, that's so
consequently,
sad.
he did kill her, but not by strangling.
Yeah, I was
He
like, how
basically
is she
scared her
so
to
okay with this one?
death.
That's so sad. I mean, they're all sad. I feel awful for all of the victims, but like,
But what a way to go.
poor
Like, you literally get scared to death by the Boston Strangler.
Oh, that's so sad.
Nina Frances Nichols was 68. She was sexually assaulted and strangled with her nylon stockings. And she was found on June 30th, 1962, in Boston. Helen Elizabeth Blake, 65, sexually assaulted, strangled with her nylon stockings, and found on June 30th, 1962, was found in Lynn, Massachusetts. Ida Odes Erga, 74, was sexually assaulted and strangled, found on August 19th, 1962, in her apartment at Beacon Hill, Boston. Jane Buckley Sullivan, 67, sexually assaulted and strangled with her nylon stockings, found on, they're all mostly stockings,
These
found
poor ladies.
on August 21st, 1962, in Dorchester, Boston. Sophie Clark, 20, sexually assaulted and strangled with her nylon stockings, found on December 5th, 1962, Fenway, Boston. Patricia Jane Bullock Bissett, 22, strangled with her nylon stockings, found on December 31st, 1962, in Fenway, Boston. I think she was
These
one of
ones
the
that are in. Sorry, go ahead.
she I think she was one of the few that was not sexually assaulted first.
First.
Yeah.
So he sexually assaulted some of them after he killed them?
No, I mean, like, he either sexually assaulted or raped them and then killed
Oh,
them, or he didn't
okay.
sexually assault or rape them at all.
Okay, gotcha. These ones that are in, did you say Fenway? Are those three close to each other? I don't know how big Fenway is. I
I
mean, are
think it
they
would
in the
be
same
like
area of Fenway or spread out in Fenway?
that. I'm not sure. I didn't look at a map. I would think that it was maybe like Omaha. So it could be spread out or it could be right next to each other. Mary Ann Brown was 67, raped, strangled, beaten, and stabbed, found on March 6th, 1963, Lawrence, Massachusetts. Beverly Simmons, 26, stabbed to death, found on May 6th, 1963, in her home at Cambridge. Marie Evelyn Corbin, 58, was raped, strangled, and strangled with her nylon stockings. She was found on September 8th, 1963, in Salem, Massachusetts. Joanne Marie Graff, 22, strangled with her nylon stockings, was found on November 23rd, 1963, in Lawrence, Massachusetts. and Mary Ann Sullivan. 19 was sexually assaulted and strangled with her nylon stockings, found on January 4th, 1964, in Boston. And the murders of Margaret Davis, who was 60, of Roxbury, and Cheryl Laird, who was 14, of Lawrence, were originally attributed to the Boston Strangler, but were later found to be unrelated. So that's where you get the 13 total.
So he started out with the older women and then kind of
And
started
then once
to.
he got more confident, he went for the younger women.
Dang. 19 and then 14. Oh, man.
The 14-year-old wasn't attributed to him. He
Okay.
didn't say that
So,
that was
far,
him.
the 19-year-old is the youngest he
Yes,
did.
19 to 85.
That's pretty. Pretty drastic change there.
An age difference, yeah.
Yeah.
I think he started shying away from the older women once he scared one to death. He's like,
Mean, could
oh.
you imagine? Like, I didn't get to do anything to you yet.
Right, which
But good for her, though. I mean,
sadistic, but like he scared her to death. And then he was probably like, well, now I need to go find somebody else because my craving hasn't been, because she just like dropped dead.
which is awesome for her because I mean a little less torment that she had to actually endure. But
Yes and no, but like, would you want to go that way, being scared to death?
I mean, it's much better than being raped and then murdered.
True,
But
true.
yeah, I would choose being scared to death over
Yeah, I
that
mean, if those were my only two options, I suppose
Yeah.
that would be, I would go with the being scared to death part. But what happens, like, I don't know if you believe in the afterlife or like ghosts or anything, but you just like pop up as a ghost and you just, for the rest of your life, you're like, oh.
Yeah.
It's like the ghosts in Harry Potter, like nearly headless Nick, his neck is never really attached. Like, are you just completely in a state of shock for the rest of your life then?
Guess I never thought about it that way. Yeah, that would suck.
Right. But the other would, I'm not going to think about it, but the other would suck too.
Yeah.
Okay. The stockings were often tied into an ornamental bow and left around their necks. Most of the women were posed as if for a pornographic photo.
With a
Yes.
bow on her neck.
Because the rest
It's
of
like
them
a
would mostly
gift.
be undressed.
So this is like a porn gift.
To himself, I suppose.
I mean, anytime I think of a bow, I think of either like bows that girls wear or a bow that you put on a gift.
It would be a very limp bow because it was made with stockings.
Yeah. That's so sad.
But on October 27th, 1964, a woman allowed a man who was claiming to be a detective into her home. This man assaulted her and then all of a sudden decided to leave and profusely said to her, I'm sorry, as he did so. It was very weird. The
Like
woman
he was apologizing
immediately
for leaving, or he was apologizing for assaulting her.
for assaulting her.
Okay.
The woman immediately contacted the police and was able to give such a good description of her attacker that it led them directly to Alberto DeSalvo. Once his photo was released, several women came forward saying that DeSalvo had assaulted them as well. Earlier the same day, he posed as someone with care trouble, car trouble, not care trouble. To future police chief of Brockton, Richard Sprousel, who was suspicious of him and actually fired a shotgun at him to get him away.
Damn.
DeSalvo was not an original suspect for these murders. DeSalvo had been 29 years old at the time. He had a rough upbringing. He had four siblings, and his father was a wife beater.
Good on wife beaters, my gosh.
Growing up, DeSalvo turned to crime to get away and spent a lot of time in and out of prison for petty crimes and violence. DeSalvo was once in the army but released for his inability to follow orders.
Really?
He married Irmgard Beck, Germany, and they had a child with a disability. Irmgard knew that her husband was sex crazed and tried to avoid intercourse for fear of having another child with a disability. Despite trying to avoid intercourse, it was inevitable, and they ended up having a baby boy without any disabilities. After the second child was born, DeSalvo seemed to settle down and become more of a family man. Which, that's really sad that you wouldn't settle down with the child with disabilities, regardless. You think that would make you pay more attention to your family, in my mind at least.
Yeah, no, I agree 100%.
This made his family and friends believe he was not the Boston Strangler because he was settling down at home, everything was returning to normal. He was acting just as any normal dad or husband should. After being charged with the rape, he confessed to his cellmate, George Nassar, of his crimes. His cellmate then told his attorney, who immediately took on DeSalvo's case. So his cellmate turned him in to his lawyer, not to police. But obviously, the lawyer had to tell the police what was going on.
Thank goodness.
Right. While there were some inaccuracies in DeSalvo's recounts of the murders, there were several details that were not released to the public that he was right on. The most suspicious one was a chair and its color at one of the crime scenes. The victim had actually stated, and I think this was one of the ones that he had raped. The victim stated the chair was brown and DeSalvo stated it was blue. Well, DeSalvo was right. So I don't know if this wasn't in her home and it's somewhere else, but he was correct on the color of the chair. So he on that one. They had no physical evidence to charge him on, so he was being charged on multiple robberies and sexual assaults of the people that had come forward. And his attorney, Lee Bailey, brought up his confession of murders in the trial in an attempt to gain a not guilty by reason of insanity verdict on the sexual charges. The judge, however, ruled it inadmissible, and DeSalvo was a textbook sexually motivated serial killer. So the majority of them he sexually assaulted, but then my belief is the one that he didn't sexually assault was because they fought back so hard. He just ended up killing them. He wasn't able to enforce them to do that. So on these charges, DeSalvo was sentenced.
Per each case or all together?
Well, they're just sentencing him on the sexual assaults and robberies. They can't do anything with the murders because they don't have any evidence. DNA evidence wasn't really a thing back then.
I would still say life.
You would be correct.
Finally.
He was sentenced to life in prison in 1967. February of that same year, he and two other inmates escaped from Bridgewater State Hospital. This began a statewide manhunt. DeSalvo left a note in his bed stating that he did it to bring attention to the hospital and his own situation. So I know back then a lot of mental hospitals like that weren't that giving the best care. So he could have had something there.
But it's not like he's really insane. I mean, he's batshit crazy, but not like for him to say he's mentally incapable of, doing day-to-day things. Like, that's just the moment you get caught doing something that messed up, like, oh, well, I'll just say I'm crazy and then I won't actually go to a real prison. So I can't, I don't know. I mean, I do see that to a point, but I still think that they at some point are kind of just crying wolves so they can get more attention.
Maybe. All right. DeSalvo posed as a U.S. Naval Petty Officer, third class, but the following day gave himself up. He was then transferred to a maximum security prison, the Walpole State Prison. 6 years later, he was found stabbed to death in the infirmary, and they never were able to identify who did it.
Ooh.
So in 2013, there was an update on this case. July 11, 2013, Boston police announced they found DNA evidence linking DeSalvo to the murder of Mary Sullivan. The DNA was semen lifted from a maroon blanket from the crime scene. So they kept it all these 60 years later, pretty much, and finally tested it.
Jesus.
So the DNA was taken from the scene, and it was a near perfect match to a relative via Y-DNA, so like a cousin or an aunt or an uncle. So it had to be somebody that did like one of those ancestry DNA or those kinds of
Oh,
things.
that's one thing you
So
don't want to have pop up when you do those.
exactly. So they got permission to exhume the body of DeSalvo and test direct DNA, which enabled them to confirm that the DNA was a direct match with DeSalvo's and the semen fluid recovered from the murder scene in 1964.
So when they exhume a body like that, are they testing like dental and like fingerprints?
No, it was DNA, so it had maybe bone marrow or hair or something like that.
All right.
It had to be something that was able to be years later.
Yeah, that's what I was kind of questioning it, but I guess that kind of makes sense.
So there's been a couple movies. The Boston Strangler was made in 1968 about the murders, and there's been a few others, books written, TV shows, that kind of stuff. But that's it. He's dead.
I mean, I'm glad he's dead. I'm glad he was stabbed to death so he didn't just go peacefully or just off himself. That probably drives me crazy when people have committed such awful things and then they go to jail for a short amount of time and that doesn't help anyone. I mean, not that him just being in there helps, but I mean, at least you know he's in prison. Chances are somebody's probably getting beat at some
Right.
point, getting in fights. I mean, oh, well. Those poor families.
Yeah.
That's so crazy. I mean, now you
I feel
don't really
bad
have
for
to worry about
them.
that because now you have the Ring doorbell. It
Right.
always seems
I don't
believable for
answer
those
my
people.
door.
Yeah. I remember even when I lived with my mom growing up, we always hated answering the door because if we were home, if our friends knew to not answer the door, we just knew that. We got home from school after you're doing homework. All the kids are going to be outside playing, so you didn't have to go knock on anyone's door.
Right.
And then on weekends, it was usually like Jehovah's Witnesses or something. So yeah, no, you ran away from the door.
We only had Jehovah's Witness come to our house once in
We
New
had them.
York when we lived there. My dad got home from pheasant hunting, and the way that our house was set up was here, and then we had like a U driveway because we were on a corner. So the U driveway went behind the house, and then the garage was behind the U driveway. So he pulled into the garage and he saw somebody at the front door. But being a responsible gun owner, he took the gun with him over the shoulder. And they must have seen him like coming around the corner because they just took off like a shot
Darted.
and they were gone. We never heard, like, we must be on some kind of list or something because they have never visited any other house of ours.
That's crazy. I mean, I don't think I've had any in this house. I know at our old house before we moved in with Jesse, we had some. I don't think that they were quite Jehovah's Witnesses, but they were some very religious folks.
We
And
haven't had Jehovah's Witness here, but we have two old ladies. I think they're evangelical. And they like legit write us long letters, like three-page
my
letters,
God.
handwritten, cursive, and everything. And I'm just like, I feel really bad.
Handwritten?
Yeah, handwritten.
That's very personal.
It's the weirdest thing. And they just keep, come to our church, come to service on Sundays and Wednesdays, come do this. And we're just like, I'm sorry, but no. Like,
Yeah.
I appreciate what you're trying to do, but go back to business.
Like, I
I'm
don't.
not
Leave me
here for
alone. Don't bother me at home. I got stuff to do.
Right. If
Especially on Sundays when it's family day. I don't know. After a while, got a little older. If they'd come and be like, you should come to church. I'm like, okay. And ever said yes, I would just be like, okay. And they'd leave. And then, we didn't see you and you said you were gonna go. I'm like, okay. Like, I'm not gonna have a conversation with you. And they just keep talking. I just be like, I said okay. I just
Okay.
okay. My mom would get so mad at me. I could see her in the kitchen laughing, like hanging behind the curtain from the kitchen window. She'd just be like, just tell him to leave. I'm like, okay,
Clearly,
like
you're
what?
not getting the message here. Like, I didn't want to come. I don't care what kind of
Oh
crumble
man.
cake you made.
So like
I should
even
get an
now
Entenmann's.
Ariana always thinks it's her friends. And I'm like, you can't just always run and answer the door because one of these times it's gonna be somebody like that. And then you're like, Nana's too freaking nice. She'd just be like, oh, okay, I'll go get my mom. I'm like, no, don't do that
Nope.
and don't say that. Just say okay and close the
Lakin's gonna learn not to be nice to those people, unfortunately. That's not my goal. But I'm just like, I'll answer the Ring doorbell on my phone and I'll just be like, no, thank you. Take your crap. I don't want it.
Not interested.
Not here for it. Or we
It's
get
like,
like roofing people, window people, and the tree cutting down people all the time. Like we get at least one of them once a week. And
I
Mike is
get
like,
the charter people once a week.
oh, that's annoying. Mike's like, just open the door. I'm like, why? I don't want to do that. I don't
I
want any part
wouldn't.
of this.
I felt really bad because when we, it was probably last summer when they first started coming. And it's always the same guy, or it's two guys and then one girl. So the two guys always come together and then it's just the one girl. The very first time I answered the door, it was the two guys and he was standing like right, like we have the, not a screen door, but we have that glass first door and then our actual door.
Yeah.
And he's like standing right up against it. So I can't even like open it, which I wasn't wanting to open it anyways. So he just keeps talking to me. And I mean, I could hear him, but I'm like, you're literally standing like in front of my door. You expect me to still want to have a conversation with you? Like, that's kind of like he was not pushed up against it, but he was like right up against the door. And the very first
That's
time,
kind of creepy.
yeah. And especially because it's, and then this little short, stouty guy. And I'm like, I can't take either one of you serious, anyways. But, ma'am, who do you have for internet provider? Why? Well, we're just doing a survey. I'm like, okay, well, I don't want to be in your survey. Well, all we need is this answer. I'm like, oh, I'm not interested. Like, I don't want to be a part of your survey. I'm like, well, do you have us for provider? I'm like, why does it? No. I'm, even if no, I'm not having this conversation. So then I
I'm
close the
not
other door.
interested in your sales pitch.
And then he rings the doorbell. And I answer it. I'm like, can I help you? He's like, yeah, I wasn't done talking to you. I'm like, well, I was done talking to
Well,
you.
this conversation is over on my end, so you can keep talking, but I'm going to close the door. Go make my own
Yeah.
tacos.
Yep.
Leave me
So, and then
alone.
the next week it was a gal that came and she's like, hi, ma'am. I'm with Charter and I'm just doing like a survey for Adams County. May I ask who you have her provider? I'm like, you may ask, but I don't want to disclose that information. Well, ma'am, that's nothing confidential. I don't understand why you won't let us know. And I'm like,
Look here, busybody. We're
they
about
literally come
yourself.
once a week, every other week. It's
I
either the
would have
guys or the gal.
lost my mind on them by now.
Yeah. I mean, now that I'm home, especially right now with the baby, I always have that door open and I'm always in the living room. So I can always tell when somebody's walking up. And now we do have the Ring doorbell. So, like, as soon as it starts dinging, I'm like running to my door, like, don't you dare knock or ring that doorbell because I would be pissed.
I will kill
And
you if you wake up my baby.
yeah. And then, so then they're like, hi, ma'am. And I'm, no, thank you. Just like last week, for a whole year now that I've been telling you no. You'd think they'd get the freaking clue.
Pretty
And I don't ever
soon.
see them going to anybody else's house. Like, it's not like,
That's
Jehovah
weird.
Witnesses, you can usually see them like working their way down the block. I never
Right.
see them go to the neighbor's house. But I also never see them go to a car. So I don't freaking know. They must be walking around the block. You'd think after a year I would have caved and been like, yeah, this is who I have. But after that very first time, I'm like, no, I'm going to be real annoying about this. If you're going to continue to bother me after I said no, thank you, close my door, and then you ring my doorbell and say, I was not done talking to you. Excuse me?
Yes, you are. We are done
Like,
with this conversation now.
I think you should meet, but they never come when Jesse's home. They never freaking come when Jesse's home. Jesse
That's a
bonkers.
little weird.
Jesse bonkers.
That is a little weird.
So Jesse always laughs at me because I don't have my, what is it, conceal and carry thing.
Permit.
What is that called? Permit. Thank you. And not that I really want one. I'm completely comfortable having a baseball bat next to me. And if somebody's coming at me or making me uncomfortable, I'm just gonna start swinging. I'm comfortable with that. I don't know why, but I'm very comfortable with that. So for the longest time, we had a baseball bat up front by the front door. And anytime it was somebody that was like that, like I would like them to like continue to harass me so I could just pull it out and be like, I will chase you off my property with my baseball bat. I don't care to be that crazy chick. Like I will do it. This has gone on way too long. But, yeah.
I mean, I don't have my conceal and carry, but I mean, we have it accessible in our house, and I'm not afraid to use it, even regardless of having that or not having that
Yeah.
permit.
I mean, you do what you
But
got to do.
when we had the fox problems in the backyard, we didn't know it was foxes. And until we went out there and saw it, because have you ever heard foxes fight? It is, I mean, go look it up on YouTube. It's not what you imagine they would sound like.
So
Not
it's not
even
like
close.
high-pitched little squeals.
Yeah, kind of. It's, I can't even describe it. It's the weirdest, most annoying sound I've ever heard come out of a creature. And it just, I mean, especially when they just like go at it and go at it and go at it. Well, Mike took a golf club out there. And I was like, hello. What if it's like a mountain lion or a bear or like something like that? Because we have those in our area, because that's, I mean, over across from us, not even half a mile, is a huge wooded area. So any of those could come out of there. We've seen deer, we've seen all kinds of stuff. We've never seen the mountain lion, or not mountain lions. What are they? They're like that. They're cats along that realm or whatever you want to call it. And they've been like just streets away from us at night. People have said, like, hey, they're big. They're here. I'm like, what the heck is a golf iron gonna do? Like,
Well, and
what are you
especially
gonna
in
do
your
with
guys'
that?
area, because like here we have crap ton of street lights everywhere. Down where you guys are at, there's not very many street lights. So it's
No.
pretty dark.
Yes. And he's like, well, I'm not gonna shoot an animal. I'm like,
But
if
you'll
it
beat it
starts
with a
like
golf club?
charging at you, why not? What do you mean?
Yeah. I mean, he has a family.
My first thought was grab the gun. Like,
Yeah.
you can always downgrade your weapon of choice here, but you can't upgrade it in that situation.
You don't have
It
enough
doesn't
time.
work like that.
That's funny. Oh man.
What
Okay. Well,
you got for me?
I should have written this down in English as well. I wrote a lot of it down in Spanish. So I'll
Uh-oh.
have to do it in English. So if it takes me a little bit, it's because I'm translating in my head. So this is a couple. Not together, just two people. They are called, let's see, in English it would be narco Satanists. Narco Satanicos is what they're called. It is Adolfo Constantino and Sara Maria Aldrete Villarreal. He is from Miami and she is from Matamoros, Tamaulipas, Mexico. They were both nicknamed El Padrino y La Madrina, which is like the godfather and the godmother. But remember that they are not together. Let's see, was born in
Like they don't know each
1962.
other?
No, they knew each other, but they were more of like a partnership, not like a relationship. Like they were not dating or anything like that. Not that I could
Gotcha.
find. Not that
Okay.
I could find, anyways. They also had the nicknames of being witch doctors.
Oh.
So he is from Miami, but his mother is Cuban, and then she's obviously from Mexico, and I think her parents are also from Mexico. They had, both of them combined, had 16 confirmed victims, but they all, it was possible that they might have had up to 26 to 30. So he was mainly like in charge, secondhand. She was actually really tall. She was 6'1" for a female. Physical education at Texas Southmost College, and apparently was a very good volleyball player. She was very smart. She was a great student. Had a rough upbringing. So most of the story is more of what he did. She was just there for like almost all of it.
Along for the ride. What
Yeah.
year is this from?
I want to say like mid to late 80s
Okay.
because so she's still alive and is in prison. Yeah. And he was born in 62 and she was born in, so yeah, I'm gonna say like late 80s.
Okay.
Okay, so together, and I kind of bounce around here a little bit. As I was reading more and more articles, it would all of a sudden like have like a flashback of or a throwback to a big crucial moment in his life growing up, and then related to how it was for the rest of the story.
Okay.
But so together they formed this drug smuggling. They were very into human sacrificing.
What is with you and the human sacrifices?
Know it's bad, especially because a lot of these, and I know I say this wrong every time. I've never been able to say it growing up. The Tamaulipas, but I
What I
think
heard
like
was
the last.
tamales.
No, it's not the Tamales, but Tamaulipas is the name of the state in Mexico.
Okay. Thank you for clarifying that, because I would have thought tamales the rest of the story.
No, that's why I think I used to say it as Tamales, like really, really little. But I know where Matamoros is, but I cannot ever say the name of that state. The last three I think that I've done have had serial killers. Either they're victims or they had some type of connection to the city and state. Oh, yeah. Okay, so they also, along the way, gained some followers. Like I said, a lot of this was with Adolfo being in charge. So when I say they, I mainly mean him.
Okay.
She just always mentioned like Adolfo and her, but he did this and she was just there. So they had a small cult kind of going on, and they experimented with quite a variety of things. They mixed voodoo and other black magic, really anything that you could think of from like the dark type they were involved with. They had the Santeria, which is, I'm gonna butcher this word too, polytheistic. Basically revolves around a different like gods and deities and Aztec warrior rituals. Palo Mayombe, I think is how you say that word, which is involving animal sacrifice. So it's interesting that they dabbled a lot with human sacrificing when one of their big practices was supposed to be with animal sacrificing. But he was very notorious when he was growing up. He dabbled in animal sacrifices, and like the neighbors would like wake up and go out their front door, and there would be some dead animals just chilling on their front porch. So he'd go out and kill them, and yeah, he had some interesting hobbies, we'll say. But this Palo Mayombe, was practiced a lot in the African culture, African religions that I guess are very widely practiced in Cuba, which his mom is from Cuba. So a lot of the stuff that he was involved with and experimented a lot was something that he had learned growing up. He just put his own demonic twist to it, basically. They did a lot of blood sacrifices, so no matter what it is that they were killing, I couldn't find anywhere that they drank the blood,
That was going
like
to be
the
my next
locusts.
question.
But they did do a lot of, like they had these, what did they call it? Nangas, NGANGA. It's an iron cauldron where they would kind of do like their witchcraft in it. So they'd stick like sticks in there, body parts or human bones and blood of all sorts. They'd mix it all up and do a little chant thing, cook it
The
all.
witch's brew.
Yeah, that's exactly what I envisioned. But they did a lot of that. I am very shocked. I don't get shocked a lot with these stories when they start to get really twisted, but when it's, a practice where it's usually like tormenting animals or doing this with an animal, how their minds went to, well, if we do that with an animal and this is how we are worshiping our gods, imagine how much more worship and how much more good could come of that for us if we are taking it like a level higher and doing it to humans. Like, I don't
It
understand
always
that
seems to
mindset.
start out with animals and then go to humans.
Yeah. So that kind of shocks me, especially when it involves people, people out of the blue, like,
One day they just decided animals wasn't enough.
yeah. And then it wasn't ever like they just were like, well, today we'll just torture this human, but let the human go. Like it's 0 to 100, like every time. Like they have no willpower to, I don't want to say just, experiment here and there with it, but they just wanted to do the absolute worst every single time.
Did they
I
have
don't know.
like
To me, that's just
psychological
scary.
issues?
I don't think she did because I think towards the end, I kind of started reading that while she was in jail. She on her own had thought that she had kind of done that. She's doing her time for the crimes that she committed. But she was very consistent that she said she never killed anyone. She said she was a witness and saw a lot of awful things happen, and she would do a lot of the tormenting and torturing, but she never actually killed anyone. But she says that what she witnessed and never spoke up or stopped it was bad as well. So
Right.
she, I guess, like came to peace with, all the awful things that she did. She hopes to just be able to just live her life, until she can't anymore. So she just seems very chill now, but I mean, some of the stuff that they did was not very chill. So I don't know.
Where was that chillness when this was
Yeah.
going on? You could have been like,
Yeah.
yo, no, not copacetic.
Yeah. I
Not
mean,
cool.
so Constanzo was actually started sexual assaults. He, two women, and I couldn't find anything confirming that he did to men, but he was so experimenting and tormenting, so it wouldn't
Wait,
surprise
he
me.
didn't do this to animals, right? Just to people?
I'm assuming it was just the people because besides him growing up and doing like leaving the dead animals on like the neighbor's porch steps and stuff, I didn't see anything that he was doing that when he was an adult.
Okay.
But like I said, it wouldn't surprise me with him since he likes to dabble with everything.
Yeah.
But he was a very well-known drug dealer. People in that area and surrounding areas respected him because of how notorious he was as a drug dealer and how he liked to torture people.
So he began sexual assault. He was a very well-known drug dealer. When he would kill, he always used their body parts for religious sacrifice ceremonies. He was always in some type of warehouse, but that's where he did all of his rituals there. He was okay, so he was a drug. Main one was marijuana.
Okay.
So he would ship it over to the US, and then that's where Sarah came in and started kind of being his second hand. They are, like I said, that they had 16 confirmed. It was possible that they had anywhere from 26 to 30 victims. one of their most famous victims. I don't know if you've heard of him. His name was Mark Kilroy.
It sounds familiar.
He was an American student. He happened to be visiting Mexico with a bunch of friends during spring break. So I think it was very south in Texas. And then they would either just walk and cross the border, go do their bar hopping, and then come back. Like, it was just a very,
oh, yeah, I did hear about him. Yeah.
Went missing while he was out dancing and drinking with his friends in Matamoros in Mexico. He had, from what I read, there was a few parts where the stories varied a lot as to how he was found, how he was abducted, and everything that he endured in between. But mm-hmm. the one thing that I did see was just that he had run up ahead because he was going to go to like just pee on a tree or something, and then they never saw him again. So his buddies had assumed that he had just found another way home, since this was very normal for them to just walk across the border, just drive down and then go back. They assumed that he had ran into someone that he had known or something, because previously, earlier that evening,
that was normal,
they were out dancing. And I mean, he'd run into people that they've seen there before or whatever. And so they didn't think anything of it. But when they woke up the next day, they quickly realized that it was probably a little more serious than that. They obviously reported him missing. Kilroy's parents even offered a $15,000 reward. And this was in 1989, I believe. Yeah, so the late 90s. 80s, sorry. They actually had a lot of help. I think when people go missing here, I mean, they'll have the cops involved. The mayor.
When people go missing here, they're like, oh, no, it has to be 48 hours. But then they end up on, like, the show, 48 hours. The first 48 hours are the most crucial, but they won't let you actually do anything.
Yeah. Well, I think it had been a few weeks, and they still couldn't find him.
Oh, my God.
But, I mean, like I was saying, there's a lot of times where people go missing. I don't want to say here, like, where I'm at, but just, like, in general, like, in the U.S. mainly. Right. They go missing. You don't really think like that, you know, your mayor's going to get involved. You don't think that the governor's going to say this. You don't think they're going to have like the board, or, you know, you're not going to have everyone involved. It's usually like people that are good citizens and want to help do a search, or just the police that are, you know, just stay out of it. Like, we'll do our job. Like, that's what we're here for type. Well, Kilroy's parents, either he was just an extremely athletic student, or his parents were just very, very popular in their area. But they had the local police, the attorney general, the governor, and the senator of Texas all involved. And then on top of that, they had the DEA by the border, and then also some of the Mexican police force that was right along that same area. And then at some point, Mark Kilroy's case was also on America's Most Wanted, because very soon after they reported him missing and his parents offered that reward, obviously they suspected that some serious foul play was involved.
Right.
Well, it started out obviously as a missing persons case. After they kind of questioned and kind of retraced their steps as to how he was abducted, the last two people that they had seen, what bars they had encountered, if they went, you know, anywhere out to eat or to grab, you know, more beers for the way home, anything like that. They weren't coming up with anything. Nothing really that kept leading them to any bigger clues or anything. But so they ended up having some hypnotists come in and hypnotize the group of friends that he was with that night. And his friend Bradley Moore, while he was under hypnosis, told the police that he recalls seeing a Hispanic male that had a cut on his face talking to Kilroy that night that he went missing. Like, that was the last person that he saw him talking to. At this point, he had been missing for 3.5 weeks, and somehow they ran into this gentleman called Elio Hernandez Rivera. And I think how they actually found him was he had been kind of busted on, I don't want to call him a snitch, but you know how police have their checkpoints, especially when you're in Mexico, like every so often, you know that there's going to be a checkpoint for cops, and they kind of just search your car and ask you what you're doing to make sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think he was letting people know when there were police checkpoints. So he was doing the checkpoint, but just to let people know where the cops were, type of thing. So
what while they were checking for.
Mm-hmm. And apparently that was, at that point, that was very normal. So while he was being questioned, and, you know, he ended up being arrested because, I mean, everybody knew him and knew that this was very normal for him to be doing. While he was under arrest, he pointed out some other drug dealers, and even pointed out his family ranch that was called Santa Elena Ranch. And when they first got there, they were just looking for drugs. It wasn't anything huge by any means. It was more of, like, really all they planned on finding was drugs. But as they kind of got to looking around and kind of asking more questions, as they were walking around the property, because it's a pretty big ranch, so they have a couple warehouses and like farm buildings, they had actual animals on the property as well. As they were walking around, they kind of started getting this really, really bad stench kind of going on. So then they started following that smell, and it was a smell of death. What they found was some shallow graves with some mutilated bodies of over 12 men, including Kilroy. Some of them were slashed with knives, some of them were shot, some of them were burned, and some were even hung. A lot of them were missing eyes, ears, testicles. Their hearts were ripped out, and I think there was one or two that was decapitated. Oh, yeah. So did you hear me when I said that they, some of them had been slashed with knives, shot, some of them were burned, and a couple were even hung?
I did not hear that.
Some of them were missing ears, eyes, and testicles. And some of them had their hearts completely ripped out. And I think there was one or two that were decapitated.
Oh my God. And they were just in like mass shallow graves.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, it keeps going away. Yeah, and they were all for these rituals that they were practicing.
The dark arts, mm-hmm. witchcraft.
Yeah, I tried to kind of go down that rabbit hole of all of these things that they practiced, but I mean, I don't want to say that it started out to be a simple practice that was very common back in the day, because he took everything, like, it was right here, but then I'm going to do it on a human, and then I'm going to like one up it, like, every time. So he was just always going down, like, he went from practicing this to adding a little bit of this and this and this and this, and then it was just like a whole thing. So it was never a consistent ritual.
He just tried to take it further and further and further.
Yeah, like, you could definitely tell he was enjoying it. So like, yeah, the cult itself, and then obviously mainly Adolfo, really believed that performing all of these rituals would make them completely invincible. There was one, let's see, there was the one that they found in that cauldron, that they legit found a heart in there. They found bones, and I mean, and you could smell all of this. Like, I don't understand how people that were working on this farm, even though it was a drug thing, how do you not smell all that going on, or hear all of that, or see it, or question any of that, you know?
If you're getting paid enough money, you probably just look the other way.
Yeah, but I mean, even just a smell, though, like, oh, I don't think that that's a smell that I could get used to, like the smell of death.
But think about it, like, this is a dumb reference, but I'm going to use it anyway. Like in Bad Boys 2, that movie, when they kill the Russian guy in the kitchen, yeah. And they just find the finger.
Yeah. Like,
these people must have no sense of smell.
No, well, and I'm sure that they probably don't care. I mean, they're all about the money, but oh, I could not handle
it. It's just like another day to them.
Yeah. I mean, even like when Jesse goes deer hunting with the guys, when I go down to the barn, like, I mean, it's not like, hey, I want to smell a dead deer, but I'm like, you know, we eat from that. So like, you suck it up for a little bit, but it's not like I'm going to be around that 24/7 for the rest of my life. Like,
right.
I don't know.
It's a little different when it's your own species too.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
It's a little closer to home.
But they did it. They found at least, at least 12 males. I didn't see that they had found any females, so they must have just only tortured men. I didn't really look too far into those, though, just because Kilroy was their most popular one.
Mm-hmm.
Most well known for it. Kilroy was found with a chop to the back of his neck, and then he was actually severed at his knees.
His brain, the back of the neck.
Yeah, so I think he kind of just like used a machete and just like whacked him.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Okay, so when they found him, he was severed at his knees, and then he had his brain and spine had been removed.
What the hell are you using that for?
I know. And I couldn't find that they found them somewhere. I just saw everywhere that his brain and spine were removed. Yeah.
Ugh.
That's why I kind of wondered, like, if they thought that this dude was, like, actually, not this dude, that they thought Mark Kilroy was actually, like, super smart, if they think that using their bones and their hearts and all of that will make them invincible. Did they think that by cooking his brain, that was going to make them smarter? Or, you know, like, I couldn't see that they were eating any of this stuff anywhere. Wouldn't surprise me, but
his body must have been so unrecognizable to be able to get his brain and his spine out.
Yeah.
Ew.
But I didn't look for pictures. I didn't want that confirmation, but yeah. So this poor guy, I feel so bad for him. But I did see that they did try and feed him. I mean, it wasn't like they were giving him like gourmet meals by any means, but I did see here and there that they would give him plenty of water to drink and that he would have eggs to eat among some other small things here and there. But you know, at least they were feeding the kids.
Beans and tortillas they were feeding the, yeah. The brothel ladies a few weeks ago.
Oh, man. I mean, if you're Mexican, you're eating beans and tortillas with every meal anyway, so it's nothing new to us, but
yeah, but it's some other people you're like that you eat.
Yeah. Yeah. So the cult members and Adolfo, you know, they were all starting to believe that all of these rituals make them completely invincible. Some of them were even found wearing like some vertebrae like around their neck, like a necklace, because that would give them like, you know, like
the heebie-jeebies.
People would see it and be like, oh, okay, they mean business. Kind of like when you see somebody tattooed with like a teardrop on their eye, like you're instantly like, I'm not gonna mess with them, you know, like, I'm gonna steer clear. Well, if you see somebody wearing human body parts, you're gonna be like, okay, I'll just walk the other way, is what they thought.
Walk, run. Yeah. They probably want to add on to that necklace.
Yeah, real fast. But I guess the entire time they did not show any remorse for any of the crimes they had committed, for any of the murders or torture, nothing. So Adolfo's mom and grandma were very into santeras. Adolfo grew up Catholic, and his mother actually took him to Haiti to learn about voodoo all the time growing up. So that was very normal. So it was interesting that he grew up Catholic, learning voodoo, and that his mom and grandma were very involved with it. So they kind of...
Aren't Catholics, like, really against that kind of stuff?
Mm-hmm.
That's what I thought.
I mean, at least I thought so. The Catholics I was growing up with and around when I was younger weren't too fond of voodoo.
No, I thought it was, like, very, very shamed and looked down upon.
Yeah. So I don't know if that makes any difference being Cuban and Catholic and into voodoo and all of this stuff, because her first husband, so she was married three times. Her first husband, I don't remember how he passed away, but, like, every time she got married, like, the crimes or the awful things that her husband was doing was always, like, also one-upped. So they just really liked to be competing within the family, apparently. But her second husband introduced Adolfo to drug dealing. So Adolfo That's and his winner. Mom were, yeah, they were actually arrested a lot for theft, vandalism, and shoplifting. I don't want to say that his mom is to blame for it, but it definitely seems like she was very okay with, I'm okay with people raising their kids to be open-minded and like people should know what voodoo is, whether you're religious or not. Like, you should know what it is and how people have practiced it in the past compared to how they're doing it now. Like, I think it's okay to look that stuff up. I don't think that it's a bad thing to ask, hey, what's voodoo? You know, like, I think there's some parents that like shelter their kids. So then when they kind of get to growing up and they hear these things, they're like, oh, I've never heard of that before. Like,
yeah, what
they
is
need
that?
To know. Yeah. And his mom was just like, but it's one thing to teach your kids and to be hands-on and like practicing it like religiously in your home with your children growing up. Like, that's a whole nother level.
Right.
I'm not okay with that, but. So there were a couple different articles that I found as to how Adolfo was actually found. But in the end, it was basically he was just getting inside his own head. And it's believed that he was killed during a shootout with police. But there's also other stories that say that he ordered one of his own men named Alvaro de León to shoot him, as well as one of his other right-hand men named Martin Quintana with a machine gun. So to me, if you're giving your machine gun, so police was, I think he was in an apartment. He was arguing with someone. They got called in for this domestic dispute. And then since he heard the sirens from the cops, he thought that they had found him because of all of these things he had already done. So
guilty conscience.
He was just, yeah. So he's the one that initiated the shootout. So as the cops were approaching, you know, and he's going off with this machine gun, then they were bringing in more reinforcement. So to me, if you're giving your gun to one of your men to shoot you and your colleague with a machine gun from an apartment distance, there's probably not going to be much of you left, right?
Right. Yeah.
Because if it was just like a rifle, you know, just one shot at a time type of thing.
Unless it's buckshot.
That's true. That's true. But so to me, it'd be hard to identify them, right?
I mean, DNA was a thing, starting to be a thing then.
Yeah. So, I mean, they did end up doing the dental and fingerprints, and they verified that it was those two that were shot and killed.
Oh, okay.
And then so Alvaro with the, which is very interesting with that name. Alvaro and Sarah were arrested shortly after that. Sarah's actually still in jail. There were a lot that Sarah and Alvaro were sentenced to 60 originally. And then Sarah, for whatever reason, was like legally, they could, there in Mexico, could only actually sentence her to 50. And that she's eligible for parole after serving 25 years. But if she ever does get released, I have no idea. I mean, if she's saying that maybe they came to an agreement, you know, if she confessed and said, I will tell you everything, but I did not do any of the murders, so I don't want to get convicted with that, you know, I don't know. I couldn't really find anything on that. But if she does ever get released, she's in jail right now in Mexico, but the U.S. is planning, I guess, on arresting and trying to prosecute her for Kilroy's murder.
So you said she didn't kill anybody, but did she do any of like the, how do I put this, like body carving for that kind of stuff, or we don't know? Because I'm just kind of curious, like you said in the beginning the majority was about him, but
mm-hmm.
I'm really curious, like, where did she come into this other than just knowing, which I think that's like conspiracy to commit crime or something like that.
Well, like when, how they first met?
No, like throughout this, like what her part in the crimes were.
Oh, she practiced all of those same rituals. Like, she was into the cooking the body parts and the torturing and the beating and the kidnapping and the luring people in. So like earlier when I was talking about that, they saw Kilroy talking to somebody at the bar when they were out dancing. There's rumors that she was who he was talking to at the bar.
Oh, so she might have been like the bait to lure people in.
So I kind of wonder, especially with how much drugs Sarah and Adolfo were into selling. I kind of wonder if with both of them being into drugs and selling and all that, but most of the drugs that I found that it was that they were selling or distributing or giving away was marijuana and coke. So I kind of wonder if when the Kilroy and his friends went down to Mexico to party, maybe they were trying to buy some drugs to continue partying on the way home. And then that's how they got in connection with Sarah, because I don't think it was like a, from what some of the articles that I read, it wasn't that he knew, like he wasn't buddy buddy with this girl he was talking to, but it could have easily been a buddy of a buddy. Or, you know, sometimes it's a little less suspicious to have the female go and talk to the guys or give them the drugs. But
well, I thought you were going to say that they maybe like roofied the drinks.
I mean, that very well could have been too, but.
And then they weren't in the right mind. And then like when he ran ahead to go pee or whatever, he just ended up like going in a ditch and they grabbed him real quick because they were following him or something.
I mean, and that very well could be. I mean, he was legit abducted. So the guys just remember kind of seeing him when he was going to pee. And then that was kind of it. Oof, the next thing they knew, he was gone. Yeah. So then they never got clarification as to how he was abducted. But when that guy, his friend got hypnotized, he kind of, I guess, recollected that it was a Mexican guy or Hispanic guy with a slash on his face. That's all he could remember, apparently. So, I mean,
that could even have been anybody.
Yeah, when they found the guy from the ranch, what was his name? Elio, I think. Even when they found him, like, they weren't even anticipating connecting him to Kilroy's disappearance. I mean, that was just kind of just like another road stop type of thing. Right. Yeah, and so then when he was like, oh, yeah, and we also have a family ranch. And they're like, oh, well, let's go take a look at your family ranch. And they're like, oh, look, here's a bunch of drugs. And what's that smell? Oh, look. Oh, and you killed a bunch of people.
A bunch of dead bodies.
Yeah, and like it was cauldron, just one thing after another thing.
That guy really stepped in it.
Yeah. So in the end, I think, so Sarah's still in jail. Obviously isn't still out on parole, but De Leon ended up only receiving a 30-year sentence because he says that the worst thing that he did was to participate in that domestic dispute towards the end. But I mean, when you're in a cult, everyone's doing something. You don't get to just be that one person that doesn't ever do anything bad.
But even if you knew it was happening, you know, you didn't say anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. You were partaking in these creepy ass rituals.
Yeah. So, I mean, she's in jail. She's being punished for her crimes. And early on when I was looking up all of these articles, Adolfo, originally they say, like Wikipedia says that he died via suicide, but they're considering it, after reading it all, via suicide because of the shootout. So he initiated it. So whether he got killed by the police during the shootout or he got killed by his right-hand man that was instructed to kill him.
He planned to go out.
Yeah. Like he was ready, apparently.
So messed up. Like if you did all of that, you should have to serve something.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. At that point, I don't care that your guilty conscience is catching up with you because, like, it should. Like, you did some awful things. You did
some pretty fucked up shit.
Yeah. Yeah. But.
Golly. How can you, like, sleep at night being like, oh, yeah, I ripped out somebody's spine and brain today?
Mm-hmm. Just be like, and the hearts.
Yeah. I slept like a baby. What?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, and especially because, I mean, I don't think it was a big cult. Like, the one that I covered a couple weeks ago, it was, like, a whole village of, you know, 50 people. I mean, right. I think this was maybe, like, 5 to 10 people in this little group.
That is.
And they were all on board with it. Like, that's crazy.
Nutso.
Yeah. But at least I found Mark's body. I mean, I'm sure that that's, I know that's not how any parents would want to find. Yeah. But at least they know. And, I mean, so Alvaro and Sarah were very adamant that they made sure he was very well hydrated and all of that before they killed him. So I'm like, I mean, that sucks, but like, I mean, at least he was eating. I don't know. I mean, you don't want to think about people being starved to death and being tortured and not being able to bear anything, you know, at least if you're eating, you can, I don't know, at least still a little bit of there and you think that you can escape, maybe at least have enough, some, you know, liquids in your body and fluids and being able to say, I don't want to say up with your nutrients, but have something in your system to still have that willpower and be able to physically move to try and escape at some point if you get a chance. Because I know that there were a couple articles that Mark was able to get away a little bit, but then they just bring him right back.
Yeah. I would rather just be like killed, do whatever you need to with my body, but don't like keep me there, torture me, starve me. Like that would be the worst.
Yeah. Well, and I think Sarah also received her fair share of abuse when she first started hanging out with this cult, kind of like an initiation type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So when she first got arrested, when she was doing like all of the trial, at some point she like lifted some of her clothing and you could see like bruises and like scratch marks and like, you know, scars and all of that from all of the tortures that she endured.
So she was for sure a victim of abuse in this too.
Mm-hmm. But it's just so crazy because, you know, when I'm sitting there reading that, she was a college student in Texas and she was a good volleyball player and she was 6'1" and she was an honor student. Like, this is like, you know, your typical college student. And then you have a whole nother life where you're out there in a cult killing people and sacrificing their body to some gods. Like, what? Like, how did you come up with this?
Just proves you never know who you're talking to.
Yeah, that is so scary.
I couldn't. That's baffling. Honestly, it is. I have no idea how to even, like, comprehend that.
Yeah.
That's nuts.
Yeah.
But at some least they're taken care of now.
Yeah, I do. I enjoy some of these ones when I know that somebody's at least in jail or, I mean, like it's weird that Sarah was a very good student, was athletic, and then went down this dark road and then is now in jail. And somehow she still thinks she's like at peace with herself. Like, at one point you were a good person.
Psychological going on there.
Right? I couldn't see anything growing up. She was just like your like good kid on the block type of thing. And then all of a sudden one day she was like, let me go do this. She could have, yeah.
And then gotten sucked in and they're like, well, you're here now. So
no going back.
Stay with us.
Yeah.
I could see that as being something that happened for sure.
Yeah. But that's the story of them. I feel like that was more of a Mark Kilroy story than the other two, which I'm completely okay with because, I mean,
his story. Bring a little bit of light to him, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But
all right, guys.
That's a wrap.
That's it. Episode 5. Go rate, review, subscribe. Please
subscribe. And we have yet to have our first review.
Yes, we're still waiting. Please, 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 please take 3 minutes out of your day and go do it. It helps us out so much. It would be
pretty nice.
And yes. If you aren't subscribed and you like it so far, please subscribe. It helps us.
And also, for those of you that haven't been able to find us on Spotify, it really just comes down to we're still a fairly new podcast and we need some more publicity and some more subscribers. So the more subscribers we get, when you go into search a true crime podcast, ours at some point is going to be up there. It's going to happen, you guys.
And I'm going to start linking it on our social medias when I do our Sunday post as well. So you can just click on that and it'll take you directly to our Spotify page. So you can subscribe right on there. I don't know if you can follow on there. I know you can follow certain, like,
I did it on Spotify.
Yeah, so you follow or subscribe, whatever it's called.
Yeah.
If you're on Apple, same thing, do that. And it'll help us in the ratings so that we can go up and actually be seen more.
Yeah.
And
feel free to message us too.
Yeah, if you need help, we'll always help you find us. Or if you have any suggestions for cases for either of us, please email us, let us know, reach out on social media, any of those.
Yes, I know that we have a lot of my fellow Mexican friends that listen to our podcast. So if you guys have any good Mexico ones that I could cover, please let me know. That would be fun.
All right, guys.
Awesome. We'll see you guys next week.
Bye.
Bye-bye.